from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
G'day there and welcome to The Rewrap. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on Newstalk ZB in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB and this morning Chris Harris, not the medium-paced all-rounder from the 90s, but the Top Gear presenter, he's on the show. Jeez, that took a long time to get out, Glenn ZB. We'll meet Stephen Miller. If you don't know who he is, he's not the guy who had the very successful late 70s, early 80s rock band. And Mercedes and leather. It's not leather. So there's a lot of things that aren't things this morning. And one thing that we need to know, whether it is or it isn't, is it all right for prime ministers to have babies?
Is asking a female prime ministerial aspirant about potential pregnancy or childbirth appropriate? And in this case, the answer is an unquestionable yes. Yes, it is. Why? Because the prime minister's role is unique. So firstly, it must be remembered Jacinda Ardern raised the issue herself. She stated publicly and voluntarily that she didn't want to be leader because she wanted children first. As a result of Tuesday, that clearly changed. And as a result of the change and a result of the fact the Prime Minister's job is a 24/7 existence, unlike any other job in the country, it thus becomes a fair question. Secondly, and very importantly, Jacinda Ardern said once again, voluntarily, she wasn't bothered by the question. And if she isn't bothered, why is anyone else? If the person at the centre of the debate is fine, why do we angst on their behalf? Also, the inference of the question was hopelessly misconstrued because the response was driven by emotional agendas, not common sense. The question is not about being pregnant and whether you can be with child and do the job. It's about maternity leave. Prime ministers don't have the luxury of taking 6 months or a year off to give birth and be at home. And critics will say, but she wouldn't take 6 months off. But we don't know that, unless the question is asked. And given the whole idea of a female elected leader, giving birth is, as far as I know, unheard of in the Western world, it is hardly surprising there's a question pending on the subject. And that's before you get to the simple truth, right or wrong, that prime ministers, the public life, elected officials, they're an open book. And if we can't handle a question, for God's sake, what's going to happen when something serious unfolds?
But, you know, you're talking about ladies in power, and that just drives people insane! Drives them completely over the edge, and here's some more of the feedback.
Finally, a broadcaster with some balls. I don't often agree with you on things, but I'm fuming mad over Ardern, and so it goes on. She is not self-employed where she can do what she likes. She's trying out for the most respected, most powerful job in the country. I think that's one of the critical points that most people who went off yesterday, and it does sadden me that the number of people, the number of angsty people in this country, and this stuff goes global, and we look like village idiots. We look like we're literally so bored and we've just discovered Twitter and Snapchat and Facebook that we all sit around in the office all day going, and it's embarrassing. But you must recognise this was never about women. It wasn't about women getting pregnant or women's rights or anything about. It's about the singularly unique job that is being Prime Minister. There is no other job like it, and because of it, you must treat it differently, see it differently, and whether you like it or not, people who aspire to that singularly unique job are an open book. And all the people who have texted and going, and what about Helen Clark? Did Helen Clark ever get a hard time? Have you got amnesia? We spent half our life giving Helen Clark a hard time about the fact she didn't have children.
I believe people wrote books on it.
For God's sake, what is the matter with people? We angst about all of this for years on end and then instantly forget it like we're fish in a bowl.
Did you give Helen Clark a hard...
Yes! For years! God's sake.
The really stupid thing, of course, is that she's not going to be Prime Minister, so it doesn't matter. Okay, now, Chris Harris. Like I say, he's not that prematurely bald guy who used to take amazing catches as a close-in fieldsman. He's another guy who's on Top Gear at the moment. That's on Prime.
Do you feel like you are living the dream?
Yeah, of course I do. I've been car-obsessed since I was, able to think about stuff. And I now get to present Top Gear, which is the biggest car show in the world. So, yeah, I effectively get paid to do stuff that I would pay to do. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Indeed. Now, tell me about some of your cars. I read with great delight. I'm a 911 man myself. You've got had a 1972 911.
I've had... Oh, you're going to hate me for this. And this is not a humble brag. I must have had 30 911s. At the moment, the 72 car's gone. At the moment, I've got a 1990 964, it's a C4, so the four-wheel drive one, but it's done 50,000 miles and it's had one owner before me, so that's a bit special. What have you got?
I got a 911 4S Cabriolet.
Yeah, well, they're wonderful things, aren't they? It's a bit like a drug, really. Once you get into them, you can't really kick the habit, can you? And you've always got to have one in your life. I adore them. I just think they're all about engineering, practicality, usability. You just use the thing as a normal car, but it makes you feel special every time you get in it. I just think they're wonderful cars.
I think they are the greatest mass production car of the modern era, and probably by quite some margin.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it, that it's had such an enduring appeal, because it is quite a compromised design in terms of its physics. And that's one of the great things about the 911, is that it is fundamentally flawed in many people's eyes, in that the weight is in the wrong place because the engine's out the back, and people think that makes it handle badly. And Porsche have sort of used its engineering expertise to battle against the laws of physics to end up with this machine that is actually unique in the correct sense of the word, in that it's a sports car with four seats that performs as well as any car with two seats that is supposedly sporting. Mm. And it has this huge universal appeal. I mean, they've built millions of the things. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's also an icon.
Oh, listen to those two. Isn't it nice listening to them talking about Porsches they have owned over the years? How nice. Now, Stephen Miller, he appeared in the White House press briefing this morning. I feel like we might be obsessed with these because they're on the TV screens in front of us as we do the breakfast show, but is it entertaining? I think it's slightly entertaining.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce to you this morning Mr. Stephen Miller.
And as a result of this policy, in place now for many years, we've seen significant reductions in wages for blue-collar workers, massive displacement of African-American and Hispanic workers.
Who is this man I hear you asking? Stephen Miller's doing the White House press briefing this morning, having gone through Spicer and Ms. Huckabee, who remains in the administration. Fear not. Kelly's not got to her yet, we don't think. Grabbed her by her pearls and heaved her out of the White House.
Scaramucci did actually do one, didn't he?
He did a singular, I'm Scaramucci, welcome to the White House, things are going to change, and that was it, and it's the last time we ever saw him. But Stephen Miller, interestingly, have a look at him sometime, and I've ruined it for you, but have a look at him and go, I wonder how old this guy is. This guy is 31. He looks 103. He is the youngest senior policy advisor that Trump has got. He's a very close friend of Steve Bannon, but one of the most famous stories is he once rung up a very close friend of his, and he said to the friend, he said, I don't want to be your friend anymore. And then he gave a long list of reasons why he couldn't be friends anymore, which is a very strange thing to do. And one of the things...
That's very Larry Williams, isn't it? Issue number one.
Yeah, issue number one.
Issue number two.
I don't want to be your friend anymore. He quoted Roosevelt in his high school yearbook quotation, and Roosevelt's quote was this. And this gives you some sort of insight into why he's in the Trump White House. There can be no 50-50 Americanism in this country. There is no room here for only 100% Americanism, only for those who are American and nothing else. That's a high school kid. Weird, eh? Anyway, his proudest achievement in high school apparently was forcing the school to comply with the California Education Code's requirement that a patriotic exercise be conducted every day. And the school wasn't doing it. So he went to the principal and did something about it. He also wrote to a radio talk show host called Larry Elder.
So I think we know what kind of a person he is. Now, just have a listen and see if you can hear that in his voice and the slightly mansplaining way that he's running this press briefing.
Public assistance if they become unable to support themselves financially. And then that person can bring in a relative who can bring in a relative who can bring in a relative. And that's why they call it chain migration.
See, there you go. We're just explaining to... I mean, most of these political journalists have been doing it for a while, but he just wants to make sure they know exactly what's going on.
He is a man in charge, Mr. Stephen Miller. We'll be seeing more of him in the future.
Yes, he was definitely a guy who enjoyed telling the journalists which ones were allowed to speak and which weren't. And schooling them on a little bit of political history when required. We're going to go back to luxury cars just for a minute, because Mike had this news this morning.
Congratulations to the New Zealand farmer once again, because here's the big deal. I don't think it's going to work personally, but then what do I know? Range Rover, as in car scene, we got the theme this morning with Chris Harris of Top Gear coming after 8. Range Rover have decided that killing cows for leather seats in cars is bad news, and there's a group of motoring consumers in the world who want something more ethically minded, so they're producing a cloth option for their flash cars. And it started in a new model called the Velar, which they're just releasing at the moment.
It's called the Velar, did you say?
No, the Velar. They should have, eh? The Range Rover Velar. Hey, that's tripping back to the 70s. Anyway, so this is a cloth option that will replace the leather because they think that there's vegans who don't want to sit on leather in a car. I don't know. Anyway, the important point is, and Range Rover is a global company, of course, that make hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of cars a year. They're using New Zealand sourced wool, and so yet again another outlet for what we do and sell to the world. So farmers are going to be laughing at that, I suspect.
Well, could they not just call it the Faux? That's fairly classy. Got the X on the end. I am Glenn ZB. That was the rewrap for another day. We'll be back here with more wrapping tomorrow. No cows were harmed, as far as I'm aware, in the making of this podcast.